Good morning, everyone. Today's scripture reading is taken from the book of Psalm, chapter 40. It's from the New International Version. And I'm going to read the entire chapter. I waited patiently for the Lord. He turned to me and heard my cry. He lifted me out of the slimy pit, out of the mud and mire. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. He put a new song in my mouth, a hymn praise to our God. Many will see and fear the Lord and put their trust in Him. Blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, who does not look to the proud, to those who turn against aside to false gods. Many, Lord, my God, and the wonders you have done, the things you planned for us, none can compare with you. Were I to speak and tell your needs, they would be too many to declare. Sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but my ears you have opened. Burnt offerings and sin offerings you did not require. Then I said, here I am, I have come. It is written about me in the scroll. I desire to do your will, my God. Your law is within my heart. I proclaim your saving acts in the great assembly. I do not seal my lips, Lord, as you know. I do not hide your righteousness in my heart. I speak of your faithfulness and your saving help. I do not conceal your love and your faithfulness with the great assembly. Do not withhold your mercy from me, Lord. May your love and faithfulness always protect me. For troubles within number surround me. My sin have overtaken me, and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs on my head, and my heart fails within me. Be pleased to save me, Lord. Come quickly, Lord, to help me. May all who want to take my life be put to shame and confusion. May all who desire my ruin be turned back in disgrace. May those who say to me, aha, aha, be appalled at thy own shame. May the Lord bless the reading of his word.
Today's sermon is going to be part testimony and part sermon. But as I tell my students at the seminary, the best sermons are ones that you have lived through. So I haven't seen you all in a very long time because last year the seminary granted me a leave of absence, and I had a sabbatical in which I spent in Canada. But I also used this time to go on a holiday. So I went to many exotic places, including, can anyone recognize this? This is Finland, so Helsinki. I also went to Israel, so this is the Jordan River. I actually crossed the Jordan River, although this is a very narrow part of it, right? This is the Sea of Galilee, so, I walked where... Maybe Jesus and his disciples walked a long time ago, okay. Maybe not this particular area. I went to Jerusalem, and I walked up the Mount of Olives, and so this is where the temple would be. This is the grave of Jesus, the tomb of Jesus, which is now a church. And it's very interesting because... as Christians, this is the pillar of our faith, and so many people lining up. I think I lined up for like an hour and a half to go in. And when you go in, there's nothing there. There's a sign saying Jesus is not here, right? It's so ironic, but so triumphant as well, I also went to Greece. So this is Athens. Actually, it seemed like I just went around the world, but a lot of this was for work, too, so I was there for a conference. So eventually I went to Canada, and the place where I learned the most during my travels actually was not Jerusalem, it was in Athens, it was in Helsinki, but it was Vancouver, where I spent 40 days in the hospital. So when I was in Vancouver, I had a heart attack. And there's like different kinds of heart attacks, and mine was like the most severe one. So, you know, my entire artery was blocked. And then I also had some infection where I was isolated. And so it was a very interesting feeling because I had a heart attack, and then I was in the hospital, and people could only see me if they wore these, you know, hazmat suits. You know, so everyone who came in, you know, treated me like I was an alien. And then finally, after heart attack, actually, I had a stroke. And so a piece of the blood clot went to my brain, and I wasn't able to move half my body. And so my wife was in the room when it happened, but it was very scary because I couldn't talk, and my right side was paralyzed. And then after it happened, the doctor told me that I would need to be in a wheelchair for a year, and that I would be using crutches for the rest of my life. And of course, when my wife and I heard this, we were very sad. But, you know, it is what it is. But then a month later, I began to take my first step. I spent a total of 40 days in the hospital. And those of you who know the Bible well, this is a very biblical number, isn't it? Lots of people have spent 40-somethings right in the desert. And so, you know, maybe this was my time in the desert. And I learned a lot, and I'm still trying to process what happened. But let me show you some pictures. So this is from Vancouver, my family. My parents, you know, are from Hong Kong, so they, you know, they rushed over on the airplane to get there. And when they got there, they bought me this Chinese rice because they're like, oh, you don't have Chinese food in Canada. I couldn't eat it because it's too high in salt content and stuff. So after we took the picture, they took the rice home. this is my sister. She came over as well. Actually, for a time, the situation was quite critical, and my family thought I was going to die. And so actually, everyone just stopped what they were doing, and they came to my bedside. Actually, it's quite a miracle because on the night I had the stroke, the doctor came in, and actually he said something that I only hear in movies, which is, I'm sorry, but there's nothing we can do. And, you know, if you guys are praying, people start praying, but we just have to wait. Because at that point, I was on a lot of blood thinners where they were not able to operate. And so it was just, let's just see what happens, you know. So that's my brother, and he's operating the remote control, you know, because that's how you move up and down the bed. Let me show you a video, actually. So eventually I was moved to a rehab hospital where, you know, the median age was probably like 65, so I brought down the average a little bit. But it was great being around these elderly folks, you know, and trying to cheer them up and, you know, who's walking better today, them or me, and going to exercise classes with them like twice a day and stuff like that. This is when I left the hospital. Oh, where's my video? Hold on. Yes. I guess maybe I'll show you next time. So anyway, now I'm back in Hong Kong, and I'm back at work, but I'm only teaching one class. And most of my week is spent doing therapy-related things. So I have acupuncture 3 times a week. I have physiotherapy 2x a week. And then I go to get my blood checked 1x a week as well. So the stroke happened 5 months ago. So I'm still sort of in the recovery period, but I can walk in a straight line pretty well. And so thank you for your prayers. But God is very good. And so I know very well what Dr. Moy's feeling right now because I was in the hospital not too long ago myself. So this is acupuncture. In Hong Kong, when they acupuncture you, they also like hook you up to a battery. Did you know this? Some of you have done this before. But when they first told me that, I was a little scared. I'm like, you're going to do what? So I spent 40 days in the hospital, and for me that was an amazing experience. And as I left the hospital, this is the song that I carried out of the hospital with me, Psalm 40. And why do I like this psalm so much? Well, a few things, you know, directly have to do with my stroke and heart attack. You know, in verse 3, it talks about, you know, walking secure steps, you know. In verse 12, it talks about heart failure, you know. But also because I think as I was in the hospital, I read the Psalms a lot because it wasn't a lot about telling you what to do, but instead it took seriously the different seasons of a person's life. I mean, if you read through the Psalms, a lot of them are complaining, aren't they? A lot of them are saying, you know, Lord, when are you going to do something? Or, you know, I've been in the mud for a long time. What's happening? I think the Psalms provide for us a guide to speaking to God in different seasons of our life. And that's something that Christians need to do better. Yes, we have our faith, but at the same time, we can take seriously the challenges of life and how they make us feel. I think the Psalms are very real in that way. They show us that we can be honest with God, and they teach us that it is important to reflect on what God has done for us. And that's something that I am still learning myself. If you look at the psalm in an academic way, it's a pretty long psalm, so thank you, Yvonne. But you can split it basically into three sections. Verse 1 to 3, verse 4 to 11, and then verse 12 to 17. And those of you who are very familiar with the Bible, verses 12 to 17 actually sounds a lot like Psalm 70. So the part where he's like, oh, there are enemies everywhere, and, you know, please help me. It actually looks very much like Psalm 70. So I think this is a very interesting point, which I'll come to at the very end. So it begins with kind of this praise, and Lord, you heard my prayer. But it ends with another cry for help. I think that's very interesting and crucial to what I want to say today. So let's look at the first section. The psalmist says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he heard my cry. I think this is interesting as well, because as you read through the psalm, how patient was he? You know, because, you know, you hear things like, Lord, please hurry up. And Lord, how long do I have to wait? And things like these. But he says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and he heard my cry. Okay? And then the Lord did a couple of things. He raised him up, gave him safety. He set his feet on a rock, okay, stability and peace. And he made his steps secure. Okay, so a few different things. But basically, what he's saying is that God heard his cry for help. God heard his cry for deliverance. And as a result of this, he's got a new song in his heart. And he's got a new song on his lips. Okay. So this is not very difficult to understand. This guy's very happy because God heard his prayer. And now he has a song in his heart. But I want you to look at the words in blue here. What is this song for? What is this song going to do? And this gives us a sense of why the Psalms are so important as well. He says, he put a new song of praise in my mouth so that other people will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. And isn't that interesting? When people hear our song, when people hear the song that we sing, they will see the Lord and know that they can trust Him. I love that. Sometimes, you know, when you go to church, you know, because of what's been happening to you maybe, you know, you're unable to sing. This happens. But when we hear Terry or the person next to us singing loudly about God's faithfulness and love, we're reminded, aren't we, once again, that God is trustworthy. And I think that is a tremendous power when we gather, because we are singing people, you know. I think to outsiders, you know, it's strange. You know, why do we, you know, gather into a room and why do we sing songs? You know, it seems very antiquated. It seems like we don't do this in any other parts of our life. But there is a great power here because through our song, we remind ourselves, maybe each other, that God is somebody that we can trust. And so the first section of the psalm talks about God's deliverance and also the song that comes from it, which allows other people to know that God is trustworthy. In the second part of the song, this is very interesting as well. Listen to me as I read this. Happy are those who make the Lord their trust, so continuing that theme of trust, who do not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after false idols. Okay, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts towards us have multiplied. And were I to talk about them all, they would be more than I can count. And then he goes on to say, sacrifice and offering you did not desire, but you have given me an open ear. Burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Then I said, here I am. In the scroll of the book is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God, your law is within my heart. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. See, I have not restrained my lips. As you know, O Lord, I have not hidden your saving help within my heart, but I have spoken your faithfulness and of your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love and your faithfulness from the great congregation. Now, do you notice any patterns in here? I think so. One of the things I've been struggling with as I was in the hospital, but especially as I left the hospital, was why me? But my question wasn't why I had a heart attack, but why was I healed? And what does God expect of me now? I look around me, actually, and there's so much suffering in the world, so much sickness, so much brokenness. I sensed this most acutely in the hospital because, first of all, I was in the emergency ward where everyone was dying, okay? And then I was in the cardiac ward where everyone was in pretty bad shape as well. And then I was in the stroke ward where everyone was, like, you know, as bad as me, if not worse. So much suffering. You know, a lot of, you know, elderly folks, you know, they can't move their face, they can't move their body, and their families are crying. I was, you know, in the midst of it all, and I just asked, you know, I felt very selfish to ask for healing when there's so much suffering. But I think one thing that this psalm addresses, you know, is, you know, when the Lord does heal you, you know, what are you to do? What are you to make of that? What are you to do with your life? In many ways, as I left the hospital, I feel like I've been given a second chance to life. My wife tells me I almost died three times, you know, the stroke, the heart attack, the infection. And one of the things I'm still struggling with is why me and what now? But these are questions that all of us can ask, you know, whether you're in good health or poor health. But I think what this passage tells us, there's two ways to respond to God's saving grace. And all of us have experienced God's saving grace. One of these ways is proclamation. So you hear, you see here, it talks about the congregation a lot, doesn't it? You don't just thank God on your own, but you let other people know what God has done. I have told the glad news of deliverance in the great congregation. How good are you at doing that? We always pray for healing. We always, you know, pray for deliverance. But when God does help you, do you tell as many people as you know? Because maybe that's part of what you're supposed to do. It says here, I have not hidden your saving help within my heart. I'm not only very happy, but I've spoken of your faithfulness, of your salvation. I have not concealed your steadfast love, but have proclaimed these things to our congregation. And so this is something I'm trying to do now, but also in my life. I'm trying to remind people that need to hear it, that God is faithful, and that God saves. If you look at this first part, he also says this, you know, you have multiplied these deeds towards us, and I want to proclaim them. Okay. So what does God expect of me? What does God expect of you in the face of grace and deliverance? Well, the first thing I want to say is proclamation or testimony. The second thing is these words in orange here. It says, sacrifice and offering you don't desire, burnt offerings and sin offerings you don't require. Well, what does he require? What does it say here? I also like the psalm a lot because it includes a lot of body parts. It's about the human being. It's about physicality. What does God desire? It says, sacrifice and offering you do not desire, but my ears you have opened. Or in some translations, my ears you have pierced. Okay, this is not talking about, you know, earrings and stuff, but it's saying an ear that is open, that can hear properly. And in the Bible, hearing is a word that means obedience. Okay, so in Deuteronomy, when it says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord your God is one," it means you have to obey, okay? And then it goes on to say, pretty much along the same veins, burnt offerings and sin offerings you don't require, but what does it require? Something much more valuable, isn't it? What does it require? Your heart. Here I am. I have come. Something much costlier than money or sacrifices. God doesn't want that stuff. He wants you. He wants your obedience. He wants your heart. I desire to do your will, my God. Your law is within my heart. And so, what should be our response? Or what should be my response? It has to do with the ear. It has to do with the heart. It has to do with your mouth. Okay? Obedience, willingness of the heart, and proclamation. Are you willing to tell people about what God has done? I'm not saying that if you do these three things and God will, you know, heal you right away, but that's what this psalm is saying. He's saying that this is the proper response to what God has done. Okay, so obedience and testimony. Okay, the last part of the psalm is very interesting because, as I said, if you look at Psalm 70, it looks pretty much the same, like the same psalm. As I mentioned at the very beginning, how patient is our psalmist? You know, he says things like, you know, please be pleased to deliver me. Make haste to help me. That means hurry up, Lord. Look at verse 17. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, my God. I love that about the psalm as well. There is this urgency and honesty there. Lord, I need your help now. And then he goes to describe what he needs help with. He says, protect me, save me, help me, be near me. He describes problems in his life which are within and without. Things are because of what he's done and things he cannot control. He talks about his sins and his loss of courage. He talks about things outside his control. Enemies that are too strong. Situations that are too tough. Futures that are too bleak. I don't know if you can relate to this, but I sure can. Now, sometimes it just feels like everything is going wrong. You know, whether it is something that I do myself, or whether it is things that I cannot control. And it's clear that this person has lost hope. I think it's very interesting. The psalm is like a roller coaster ride, isn't it? It starts off in this super, super high part. You know, I love the Lord, and He saved me, and He heard my cry. And then now we're back in the valley, aren't we? Where are you, Lord? Where are you, Lord? If you look at verse 17, it says, as for me, I am poor and needy, and may the Lord think of me. Maybe that's what you're thinking today, too. Will the Lord think of me? He saved Dr. Lowe, but will He please help me as well? And so, if you look at this last section, though, there's a few things that are repeated. Verse 13, it says, be pleased to save me, to help me. In verse 17, it says, you're my help and my deliverer. Verse 16, may all those who seek you and who long for your saving help. Right? So there's the theme of helping. Okay, this is the Lord who saves, and the Lord who sees, and the Lord who helps. Okay. Of course, I don't really need to elaborate on this, but this is one of the core tenets of the Christian faith. That we believe not only God exists, but God engages within this world. God reaches out That's actually what both of the Old and New Testaments are about. It's about us worshiping a God who is not far away from us. The Old Covenant, the New Covenant, this is about God seeing and acting, isn't it? And so this is something that we can hold on to. This is something that we can proclaim. And so in this psalm, specifically Psalm 40, but also in the whole of kind of the Psalms, there is this kind of sine wave, okay? This cycle of lament, which means complaining, okay? And thanksgiving. So I want to encourage you. Sometimes in the Christian life, maybe it's okay to complain. Maybe it's healthy to be like, Lord, why me again? Okay. Or like this psalmist says, how long? How long do I have to sing this song? Within this psalm, there is a cycle of lament and praise. The life of faith is the culmination of the ebb and flow, okay, the ins and outs of our encounters with God in the midst of our daily life. From dependency and waiting to triumph and joy, and then right back down to dependency again. It is a cycle by which hopefully we draw closer and closer to God, the God who loves us and the God who is mighty to save. And so I want to close with a few points. The first is that I learned this in the hospital, but also as I left the hospital, that maybe healing isn't the point. This actually makes me a little bit scared because if you look at the psalm, you know, it ends with a cliffhanger. Okay. I don't know if the psalmist has fallen into another pit. Okay. Because he, you know, how does the psalm end? Lord, hurry and save me, right? Maybe he is in need of help again. And so maybe the important thing is not just healing, because if I'm well today, I might be sick tomorrow. If I'm sick today, I might be well tomorrow. That is the way of life, it seems. Maybe the important thing is to know that through the peaks and the valleys, that we can experience God in a way which is real. That we can come in contact with the God who loves us and who made us. One of the most famous psalms, maybe I'll preach on this next time, is Psalm 23, where it says, "What the Lord is my shepherd." Okay, and my favorite verse in this psalm is actually the fourth verse, where it says, "Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you're with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Do you know what are the two words that scare me the most about this verse? You can guess. Not grave, not shadow, not valley. Do you know what are the two words I fear the most? It's even though. Because what is he saying? He's saying that this will happen to you. Okay. Why, Lord? Okay, I don't know either. Okay, but it says, even though you walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you do not have to be scared, because I'm there too. Okay. Because I'm there too. And maybe this is what's even more powerful than being healed or not being healed. To know that the God who made you, the God who loves you, is there as well. Second bit, and this is just recapping. How do we respond to God's salvation? Okay. With our ears, with our heart, with our mouth. Okay, I won't elaborate too much more. But we have to let other people know that God is trustworthy. Because people's faith is too important. And so I encourage you to look around you from time to time. Maybe someone needs to know that. Maybe sometimes you just need to look into someone's eyes and say, "Hey, don't forget, God hasn't forgotten you." And the last bit is the secret to enduring hard times. Okay, maybe I can write a book about this. According to this psalm, anyways, is knowing God's character. Okay. If you go back to the psalm, I encourage you to go back and read this this week. He always talks about God's faithfulness, God's love. And I think this is so interesting because when we're talking about getting people to trust God, I think this is what is most important. It's not just He's powerful. Sometimes we emphasize this too much. We say, God is so mighty. Well, so what if He's a cruel God? Right? Li Ka-shing is so wealthy, but so what? Okay, he doesn't care about me. But the main thing about the psalm, which is worth singing a loud song about, is God is faithful. He doesn't forsake people, and He has not forsaken you. And God's loving kindness. Because so these are the things we need to talk about. And also, as Ricky prayed in his prayer, to remember His faithfulness in the past. And maybe to see God's work in other people as well. Because in this psalm, the only thing that's getting him going is the fact that God has saved him before, right? He's now in need again. But he knows, he has evidence that God has saved him. And so when I left the hospital, okay, I cut off my stupid wristband. And I walked out. And I had this song in my heart. And so on this morning, as we begin sort of a new year, okay, what does God expect of you? What does God expect from me? Okay. Not necessarily sacrifices or offerings, but He wants you. And so, ever since I left the hospital, I've been reading the psalm once every day. It's become sort of my life song or my mantra. So I just want to encourage you. Maybe you're in the valley today. Okay. Don't give up, because the valley's going to turn into a peak at some point. But even before it does, know that the Lord is with you where you are. And if you can't sing a song yet, you can hear me sing this song. Let's close in a word of prayer. Our Heavenly Father, we thank You because You're not only mighty to save, but You love us, and You're faithful. And we thank You for Psalm 40 and what has taught us. And I especially want to pray for those who are in the valley today, who do not have a song in their hearts, who are discouraged and overwhelmed and heartbroken. Lord, I pray that You would encourage them. I pray that Your love and Your kindness and Your faithfulness would be their comfort. That Your rod and Your staff would guide them. And Lord, once again, we want to lift up to You again, Dr. Moy. And we pray that he would especially be able to experience Your presence with him today, and especially in these few days. Lord, once again, we commit ourselves to You. And we thank You for the chance to hear Your words upon our hearts. We give You thanks in Jesus' name. Amen.